Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I am your host, Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening today. As always, want to remind you to go to reallifepharmacology.com and subscribe to get the free 31-page PDF of the top 200 drugs. So, great little study guide if you're going through, you know, nursing school, nurse practitioner school, pharmacy school, med school, for example. So go definitely take advantage of that, and let's get into the drug of the day today. So that drug is going to be propofol, which the brand name is Diprivan, and you may hear this medication referred by its nickname as well, and it's referred as milk of amnesia because the liquid for injection has a white color, interestingly. So if you're anything like me, when we think of history, I'm always intrigued by medications in history and how they come up in the lay public. And if you remember several years ago now, propofol was actually the medication that killed Michael Jackson. So after that happened, there was obviously all sorts of press, all sorts of, different restrictions, and obviously an investigation into how this happened and all that sort of stuff. But it was a really, really unfortunate and sad situation. But I think it helped people understand that there's risks when using medications, and particularly higher risks when using them in a non-hospital type situation. So definitely, if you are interested, go back and read the story on Michael Jackson and the use of propofol. But this was essentially the drug that killed Michael Jackson, unfortunately. So what's this medication used for? Well, it is a CNS depressant, basically used for general anesthesia, intubation, procedural sedation. Off-label, it has been potentially used for refractory seizures in some patients where benzos and our other first-line agents maybe don't work. So how does this medication work? Like I mentioned, it's a CNS depressant, technically classified as that, and it potentially does that by a couple of different mechanisms. First, GABA agonist activity. So if we remember, that's kind of similar to benzodiazepine activity a little bit there. And also potentially reduces glutamate activity. So if you remember glutamate, that is an excitatory neurotransmitter in the brain. And it blocks that glutamate by blocking NMDA receptors there. Dosage forms, obviously it's used as an injection, as an infusion. But recently I did want to mention, at least in the short term here in 2020, as you're listening to this podcast, the FDA did allow emergency use authorization of a higher dose or higher concentration. Okay, so obviously this being an agent for ICU sedation is a very high-risk medication. And I have to caution you, whenever we've got multiple strengths for a high-risk medication, we've got to be really, really careful that we're getting the right dose and the right concentration, okay? This is exactly the type of situation where medication errors happen, and patients can easily be overdosed if we get that dosage form wrong there. So really, really pay attention if your institution or where you're working at is using different concentrations or different strengths. And I would say that goes for any medication in general there. So we've got this fear of shortages with COVID still kind of full out. So that's why they authorize the use of alternative concentrations there. So what are the advantages of propofol? So this is something that's often calculated in practice. You know, what are the advantages and disadvantages of propofol compared to other, CNS depressing agents for general anesthesia? So probably one of the biggest advantages of propofol, super quick onset, very quick offset. And it is incredibly lipid soluble. And if you remember things from biochemistry and things like that, very lipid soluble agents, small molecule agents, can pass the blood-brain barrier very efficiently and very quickly. So that makes sense why it's got a very quick onset of action. It gets into that brain quickly there. Also, potential advantages that can be nice may have some anti-seizure effects. So if you remember, I mentioned potentially can be used off-label for seizures. So that can be beneficial in certain scenarios. Generally okay in renal and hepatic impairment. Sometimes other agents aren't. Lower incidence of post-op nausea and vomiting compared to other agents. So that can certainly be advantageous and nice for our patients in some situations there. And then possibly a little bit better for patients with respiratory issues such as asthma and things like that. So those are potential advantages of propofol. Now let's talk about potential disadvantages and or adverse effects. So as we escalate dose, we've got a dose-dependent effect of hypotension potentially, so lower blood pressure. Obviously, we're going to be monitoring patients closely in this situation where we're using general anesthesia, but certainly patients with, you know, maybe that lower borderline blood pressure already, or maybe elderly patients, for example, that's a good situation where we might be a little extra cautious and maybe monitor a little bit more closely there. Some other potential disadvantages, you may hear painful injection reported. This medication also is a lipid emulsion. So whenever we have potential availability of energy and food for bacteria, that risk for bacteria growth certainly is there. So that's something we got to be a little bit careful about. And then we've got propofol-related infusion syndrome. So you may hear the term PRIS, P-R-I-S, thrown about. It's a potential exam question, definitely, that may come up. And this propofol-related infusion syndrome is related to higher doses and longer period of use. So generally, that's considered greater than 48 hours. So as we increase the dose and as we use propofol for longer periods of time, we've got to be aware that this propofol-related infusion syndrome can happen, or that risk goes up. And what that can result in is metabolic acidosis, cardiovascular collapse, drop in pulse, elevated lipids, rhabdomyolysis, renal failure, liver impairment. So there's a lot of potential complications from this syndrome. So it's definitely something that we have to look out for. Again, very, very rare, but obviously some of those things that I listed can be very, very serious there as well. Just finishing up here on monitoring parameters. So blood pressure, certainly we're going to monitor cardiac status in general there. O2 saturations, ABGs. And as we are on propofol for longer and longer periods of time, we're certainly going to monitor for that risk of acidosis, may check CPK, electrolytes as well. So keep that in mind as far as monitoring parameters and anticipated length of use of propofol. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. We've got everything from NAPLEX to pharmacotherapy exam, ambulatory care, BCMTMS, and of course the geriatric exam as well. If you're not a pharmacist, definitely check out our free Audible books. So if you've never had an Audible book in the past. If you've never tried Audible, you can get your first book for free through audible.com. And I've got a 10-hour book on drug interactions that you definitely need to go check out and take advantage of that. So you can find those links, all those links at meded101.com/store. All right, so finishing up on drug interactions with propofol. All the major drug interactions, at least in my mind, or that come to my mind, again, this isn't a totally exhaustive list of drug interactions, but the big ones I think about are synergistic effects. So CNS depressants adding on top of each other. So using propofol with an opioid, for example, is going to lead to likely a synergistic effect, CNS depressant type effect. So what this means, if you've got a patient on propofol and we're adding an opioid on top of that, that may reduce the requirements for propofol and we may need to back off on doses. Same thing with benzodiazepines. This really makes a lot of sense. Remember, the mechanism of action of benzodiazepines, they act on GABA, that inhibitory neurotransmitter, and propofol potentially also has that mechanism. So again, using propofol and benzodiazepines, you can really enhance that CNS depressant effect. I would also say that that falls in line with something like a Z drug as well. So your Ambiens and things like that. So Zolpidem, that can obviously have that additive effect there as well. And then the one last one I wanted to touch on was additive blood pressure lowering effects. So remember, propofol may cause a little bit of reduction in blood pressure. So having other agents on board can certainly contribute to that. Now, we're probably going to be monitoring blood pressure pretty closely, but of course we need to be aware of agents as we increase doses, change doses, and things like that. All right, so that wraps it up for today. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave a rating and review. Definitely a reminder to go subscribe at reallifepharmacology.com. Get that free 31-page PDF, good little refresher on the top 200 drugs. And of course, support our sponsor, meded101.com/store. All right, well, I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks so much for listening. Take care and have a great rest of your day.